What were you thinking of, Bannister? What possessed you? And today of all days?
Well, will you be calling in the police, Mr. Soames?
The police? I had not thought of that. I trust that can be avoided. That must be avoided.
Oh, Mr. Soames, sir. I don't think...
Good heavens, man. What is it? Here, let me help you. You'd better sit down.
Yes, sir. I think near the window, sir. I need air.
There you are. I better get you some brandy, I suppose.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I hope this will not become a matter for the police. Drink this.
Oh, thank you, sir.
In my mind, in the back of my mind, there is a memory. Last night, in the dining hall, the librarian said, and others too were aware of what he had to say, that could be our answer. That could be our salvation. The reputation of the college is at stake. St. Luke's, the Fortescue Prize. My own reputation is at stake.
The Three Students by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Dennis Hawthorne. With Clive Medicine as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Dennis Hawthorne as Hilton Soames and Desmond Llewellyn as Bannister. The Three Students.
Time is supper to be served.
7:30, Mrs. Burdick said.
Another 3/4 hour.
I must confess that I already have an appetite.
That's the problem of living in lodgings, Watson. One's appetites are at the mercy of one's landlady's inflexibility.
But these are good diggings, are they not?
Oh, yes, excellent, excellent. They're quiet, spacious, and close to the university library. Couldn't ask for better.
How are your researches progressing? Was today fruitful?
Yes, it was. It's a laborious task, researching into early English charters.
No question of that.
Yes, another day or two should finish me here, and then we can return to London. Not a moment too soon.
Oh, I'm surprised to hear you say that, Holmes.
I would have thought the atmosphere of a great university town, the groves of academe, the pursuit of knowledge, I would have thought all this to have been congenial to you. For myself, I'm enjoying our visit here. I enjoy writing up our cases. And when I'm not so engaged, I enjoy visiting the various colleges, browsing in the bookshops. Yes, this afternoon I took myself to the university athletic ground and watched the young men training. Yes, very pleasant indeed.
No doubt, Watson, no doubt. But the mysteries that I'm trying to unravel in the university library are of a somewhat arid kind. Indeed, the atmosphere in a university town is also arid. It lacks the drama of real human conflict, of day-to-day urgency. It's too complacent, too unruffled. Well, who can that be? I was under the impression no one knew we were here.
So was I. I think, nonetheless, I'd better answer it.
Dr. Watson, thank heavens I have found you in. Is Mr. Holmes here? May I talk to him? I must talk to him.
Well, I don't know.
We have met before, Doctor, albeit it was some time ago. My name is Soames. We met in the company of...
Mr. Watson, what does he want?
Come in. Holmes, this is...
Yes, I know very well who it is. It's Mr. Hilton Soames, lecturer and tutor at the College of St. Luke's. You're a Greek scholar, and we met some years ago in the company of my brother, Mycroft. How did you know we were here?
Well, university towns are small towns, Mr. Holmes. It is difficult to hide in them.
So it would appear. What can I do for you?
There has been a very painful incident at St. Luke's.
Of a criminal nature?
I fear so.
That surely is a matter for the police.
No, my dear sir. Such a course is utterly impossible. Once the law is invoked, it cannot be stayed again. And in this case, involving as it does the credit of the college and my own good name, it is most essential to avoid scandal. Since your discretion is as well known as your powers, you are the one man in the world who can help.
I think we ought to listen to what Mr. Soames has to say.
So do I, Watson, so do I. Sit down, Mr. Soames. Yes, compose yourself and expound.
Oh, thank you. I must tell you that tomorrow is the first day of the examination for the Fortescue Prize, and I am one of the examiners.
Ah, that is a valuable prize, is it not?
A great deal of money is involved, and a great deal of prestige.
Since you're an examiner, one may assume that at least one of the papers is Greek?
Yes, indeed. The first paper consists of a large passage of Greek translation. Now, today at 3:30, the page proofs of that paper arrived from the printers. I had, of course, to read them over very carefully to make sure that the text was absolutely correct. At 4:30, I had not completed my task, but I had engaged myself to take tea in the rooms of a colleague. I left the page proofs upon my table, and when I returned...
Let us leave your return for the moment. Let us follow your actions through. You locked the door to your rooms.
Of course.
Most college rooms are designed on the same principle, are they not? A common hall and staircase with rooms opening off it. You occupy the ground floor set, hm?
That is so.
And you closed and locked the door?
Yes. I tested it to make sure that the bolt had gone home, and I put the key in my pocket.
Your right-hand pocket?
Well, yes.
Everything about you, Mr. Soames, your stance, your gestures, the shading on your shaved chin, all these show you to be a man of the right. You went on your way.
I did, yes.
How long did your tea appointment last?
A little under an hour.
So, you returned about 5:30?
Yes. The college clock was striking the half hour as I returned to my rooms.
And on your return, what did you find?
As I approached the door of my rooms, I was amazed to see a key in it. For an instant, I imagined that I had left my own there. But on feeling into my pocket, I found that that was not the case. The only duplicate which exists, insofar as I am aware, is that which belongs to my servant, Bannister, a very superior man whose honesty is above suspicion.
So, the door to your rooms was unlocked.
You went in. What did you observe?
It was immediately clear to me that someone had interfered with the papers. They were in 3 long strips. I had left them together in the correct order.
On your table?
Yes. But now I observed that one of them was lying on the floor. One was on a side table near the window. The third was still on my table.
Page 1 on the floor, page 2 on the window table, page 3 on your own work table, where you had initially left all 3.
Precisely. How could you possibly know
that? You are in an urgent mood when you arrived here, Mr. Soames. Press on with your tale.
I summoned Bannister at once and confronted him with the situation. He admitted that the key was his. He said that he had come to see if I wanted tea, and finding that I was not in, he had gone away, leaving his key in the lock of the door. This forgetfulness would have mattered little on any other occasion, but on this day, of all days, it has resulted in the most deplorable situation. The examination takes place tomorrow. The examination papers have been tampered with.
What was Bannister's reaction to this discovery?
He was very much upset. He nearly fainted when I questioned him.
Fainted in what fashion? Did his eyes roll, his mouth foam? Was he suddenly prone upon the floor?
He started to stumble about. His balance was impaired. I had to help him into a chair.
And then what did you do?
I gave him some brandy.
Oh, dear. What? Do you have something to say?
It is a popular misconception that people under stress require stimulants. The reverse is the truth.
Watson is often accurate and to the point. So... Bannister, your servant, is in an armchair, a glass of brandy in his hand.
He mentioned the possibility of police involvement. At once I realized what that would entail. The reputation of the college, the probity of the Fortescue Prize, my own reputation and self-esteem. It concentrated my mind wonderfully. I made a careful examination of the room.
Well done. What did you find?
On the table, by the window, were several shavings from a pencil which had been sharpened. A broken tip of pencil lead was lying there also.
Someone had copied the passage of Greek from the page proofs. He had done so in a great hurry, in such a hurry as to break his pencil and to be compelled to put a fresh point to it. Yes, go on.
I have a new writing table with a surface of fine red leather. There is now a clean cut in it, about 4 inches long.
A scrap?
No, a positive cut. On the table also I found a small ball of clay, a kind of black dough, with specks of what looks like sawdust mixed into it. It's difficult to describe. It's not quite a ball, more pyramid-shaped.
Have you brought it with you?
No. I thought it better to disturb nothing.
Fortune has been our friend, Mr. Soames. The puzzle is full of interest, and there are clues aplenty. The man Bannister, did you leave him in your rooms?
I did.
What did you do with the page proofs?
I secured them in a cupboard, of which only I possess a key.
Yes, well, I think we must visit St. Luke's at once, Watson, don't you?
Will we be back in time for supper?
We'll do our utmost.
Yes, I will fetch the overcoats.
Did anyone visit you in your rooms after the papers came to you?
Yes, young Daulat Ras, an Indian student. He came to ask me some particulars about the examination.
For which he is entered?
Yes.
Yes, when he called, the papers were on your table, in full view.
To the best of my knowledge, they were still rolled up.
But they might be recognizable as page proofs.
Possibly, I suppose. Here we are, gentlemen.
Yeah. Before we go in, Mr. Soames, let's observe your rooms from the outside. I'd like to look at the window.
Oh, if you think that is of moment, by all means. Follow me through the arch here. That will bring us into the court. Those are my rooms. That is the main window.
Yes, the windowsill. It's quite high up, is it not? Yes, even standing on tiptoe, I can barely see into the room, and I'm 6 feet in height.
I think I see your drift. And indeed, it had crossed my mind. But I assure you that the rascal must have entered from the inside, by the door. There is no opening in the window but the one pane.
Oh, dear me, I am grateful to you for pointing that out. So, if there's nothing to be learned here, we'd better go inside. What took place is very clear. The man entered and took the papers, sheet by sheet, from the central table, your work table. He carried them over to the window.
To benefit from the extra light.
No, Watson, he did so, because from there he could see when Soames came across the courtyard, and so could effect his escape.
As a matter of fact, he couldn't, since I entered by a side door and did not cross the court.
Ah, that is good. That is worthwhile evidence. I assure you that that was what was in the intruder's mind. May I see the actual page proofs?
Of course. They are in this cupboard.
Ah, good.
Would that I had locked them here in the first place.
Mm. Now, let me see. Yes, there appear to be no finger impressions. Well, he carried over this one first and copied it. How long would it take him to do that?
Oh, a quarter of an hour, at least.
Good. He finished that one, tossed it down, and seized the next. He was in the midst of that when your return caused him to make a very hurried retreat. Very hurried, since he'd not time to replace the papers which would tell you that he'd been there. He wrote so furiously that he broke his pencil and had to sharpen it again. Observe the shards of wood that fell from the resharpened pencil. Watson, What did they tell you?
Well, not a great deal, really. It was certainly done in a hurry. Roughly, I might say. The pencil was dark blue.
The pencil that was used to copy the examination paper was about the usual size, with a soft lead. The outer colour, well observed, Watson, was indeed dark blue. The maker's name was printed in silver lettering, and the piece of pencil remaining is only about an inch and a half long. Look for such a pencil, Mr. Soames, and you've got your man. When I add that he possesses a large and very blunt knife, you have an additional aid.
You have not altogether taken me with you, Mr. Holmes. I can follow all your points, but the length of the pencil, I am lost.
But observe. Here is a small chip of wood, dark blue. On it is printed in silver the letters N.M. Following those letters, there's a space of clear wood. Mr. Soames, when we were outside in the courtyard just now, making an exterior examination of your rooms, you were quick to say that you could see my drift. Here is a piece of interior evidence. Do you see my drift in this instance?
I fear not.
What could this N.N. be? It is the end of a word. You're aware that Johann Faber is the most common of all pencil-makers' names. Is it not clear that there's just as much of the pencil left as usually follows the Johann? Huh? There go. The pencil is a short one. Now, for your work table.
Well, yes, you see the cut that I spoke of.
Yes, I do indeed. Now, you describe it as a cut. It is, in truth, a tear, beginning with a thin scratch and ending in a positive hole. Now, this small pellet is, I presume, the black doughy mass that you spoke of. Yes, roughly pyramidal in shape and hollowed out, I perceive. As you said, there appears to be grains of sawdust in it. Do you see, Watson?
Yes, interesting.
More than that, Watson, it's very interesting. Mr. Soames, I'm indebted to you for directing my attention to this case. Where does that door lead to?
Oh, to my bedroom.
I'd like to have a look round.
Oh, well, I suppose so. Yes. Of course. Allow me.
Thank you. What a charming, old-fashioned room. What is behind that curtain?
I keep my clothes there.
Yes. If anyone were forced to conceal himself in this room, he must do so there. The bed is too low for concealment. Watson, Soames, stand back. I'm going to draw the curtain. Nothing. Nothing at all. Except your suits, Mr. Soames. All the same, I wonder... Hello, what's this? Now, gentlemen, our search has not been in vain. What's this?
It's another of the pellets.
A black, doughy mass.
With grains of sawdust in it. Your visitor seems to have left traces here, as well as your study, Mr. Soames.
What could he have wanted in my bedroom?
It's clear enough. You came back by an unexpected way, and so he had no warning until you were at the very door. What could he do? He caught up everything which might betray him and rushed into the bedroom to conceal himself.
Good heavens! Do you mean to tell me that all the time I was talking to Bannister, we had the man prisoner if we'd only known it?
Yes, so I read it. Mr. Soames, I understand you to say that there are three students who use this stairway and are in the habit of passing your door.
Yes, there are.
And all three are in for this examination?
Yes.
Tell me about these students.
Well, in the... lower of the three rooms, immediately above me, that is occupied by Gilchrist, a fine scholar and athlete, plays in the rugby and cricket teams for the college, and got his blue for the hurdles and the long jump. He is a fine, manly fellow. His father was Sir Jabez Gilchrist.
Sir Jabez Gilchrist? I remember him, quite notorious in his day. He ruined himself, did he not? Gambling.
Horses, yeah. The turf.
Alas, that is so. Young Gilchrist has been left very poor. But he is hard-working and industrious, and will do well.
And on the next floor?
Dalat Ras.
The Indian.
A steady, methodical man, well up in his work, though Greek is his weak subject.
And on the top floor?
Miles McLaren. Brilliant fellow when he chooses to work. One of the brightest intellects in the university. But he is idle, dissipated, wayward in his habits. He has been gambling heavily all this term and must contemplate the examination with dread.
And it is he whom you suspect?
No, I did not say so, did I? I will not go so far as that. Let me say only that of the three, he is the least unlikely.
Precisely. Now, I should like to talk to your servant Bannister.
Yes, I will call him.
Before you do, one thing. After you'd discovered the occurrence, you summoned Bannister. He came to you, you told him what had happened, he felt faint and had to sit down.
Yes?
Yes, the chair by the window. You said this chair?
Yes?
Yes, a long way from the doorway. He stumbled across the room.
I helped him.
You gave him a brandy.
Unwise.
Yes. Ask him to come here.
At once. Bannister! Bannister, come here, please.
It is within the rooms, Watson. The answer to the riddle is here.
The window?
I think not.
The work table?
That is part of it.
He is on his way.
Yes, it's best that he should not know who we are.
Ah, yes, indeed.
You called, sir?
Bannister, yes. These gentlemen...
We are from the university board, Bannister, and we're investigating this unhappy business. We think you can be of help.
Yes, sir.
When you unlocked the door of this room to find Mr. Soames absent, did you look at the papers on the table?
Oh, no, sir. Certainly not.
How came you to leave the key in the door?
Oh, I had the tea tray in my hand. I thought I'd come back for the key. But then I forgot.
So, anyone in the room could get out?
Oh, yes, sir.
When Mr. Soames returned and called for you, you were very much disturbed.
Oh, I was, yes. Well, such a thing has never happened during the many years that I've been here. I nearly fainted, sir.
Yes, so I understand. Where were you standing when you began to feel faint?
Where was I? Well, here, sir. Near the door.
Ah, that is singular, because on feeling faint, you sat down on that chair over yonder. Near to the corner. Why did you bypass these other chairs,
Well, I don't know, sir. Well, it didn't seem... Well, I really don't...
You stayed on here after your master left.
Well, only for a minute or so, sir. Then I locked the door and I went to my room.
Whom do you suspect?
Oh, I wouldn't venture to say, sir. I don't believe there's any gentleman in this university who is capable of profiting by such an action. No, sir. I'll not believe it.
Thank you. That will do.
Thank you, Bannister.
One more word, Bannister. You've not mentioned to any of the three gentlemen whom you attend to that anything's amiss.
Oh, no, sir. Not a word.
Very good. You may go.
Thank you, sir.
Well, Mr. Holmes, what is to be our next move?
Our next move? We're going back to the quadrangle.
Mr. Holmes, time is passing, and I need to make decisions.
In due course, sir, in due course. But first,
let us look again at the exterior of your rooms.
All the windows are lit up now.
Yes, so they are. Last-minute revision before tomorrow's ordeal, I have no doubt. So, our three birds are all in their nests.
One of them seems restless enough. Look in the middle room. Someone is pacing up and down. Very agitated.
Dalat Ras. That is not in character. He is, as a rule, the calmest of men.
I should like to have a peep at each of them.
Well, I don't know. It is the night before the examination.
An examination which you may have to postpone. This is a matter for urgency. It's also a matter for subterfuge, for disguise. Let me see. Here, I shall represent myself as the college surveyor carrying out an urgent internal inspection of rooms. You, Watson, can be the builder's foreman.
Oh. But couldn't I be...
No, you couldn't. Soames, allow me to borrow your glasses, your hat and your scarf.
No, why?
I assure you that it's necessary. There's always the possibility that I might be recognised, but these simple props will, I am sure, serve me well.
Well, if you say so.
Yes.
And hat, yes. And glasses, scarf.
Thank you, yes. Disguise is something that I've studied closely and often made use of. It's a matter of attention to detail and self-confidence. See, the hat low on the forehead, the glasses close against the eyes, the scarf wound in such a way as to conceal the chin, there's a slight hunching of the shoulders, and perhaps, yes, a suggestion of nasal congestion in the voice, et voila, the college surveyor. Sorry to disturb you, gentlemen, but I have a very brief investigation to make.
Good heavens. Quite astounding.
Holmes is a master of disguise. He once penetrated our rooms in Baker Street dressed as a coalman. I had no idea it was he.
Come along, Foreman Watson. Gilchrist's rooms are on the first floor, are they not, Holmes?
Yes.
We'll work our way upward.
Who's that?
Mr. Gilchrist, sir.
Yes, who are you? What do you want?
I'm sorry to disturb you, sir. It's the college surveyor carrying out an inspection.
This is a strange time to be doing such a thing.
I realise that, sir, but it was a question of making sure that you were in. It won't take more than a few moments.
Well, I suppose it's all right. Come in.
Thank you, Mr. Gilchrist. Thank you very much. Yes, it's a question of the windows. We've already carried out an exterior survey, and... this is Watson, our foreman to the college builders.
Evening, sir.
Yes, I'll need to make a quick sketch from the inside.
I see. Well, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Now, let me see. Oh, dear, I seem to have broken the lead in my pencil. I wonder, could you oblige, sir?
A pencil? Yes, here you are.
Ah, thank you, sir. Thank you. Yeah. The pain on the right ankle. So... Thank you, Mr. Gilchrist. I wonder, could I borrow a knife to sharpen my own pencil with?
Certainly. Here you are. You won't be doing any work here this evening, will you?
Oh, no, sir. No. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Now, this is a very preliminary matter. Sorry to have disturbed you. Come along, Watson.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
Good night.
The pencil is green in colour, and three quarters of it's unused. That is not the pencil. The knife, sharp as a scalpel. So he is not the man.
He is not the man who's presented us with a pencil. We seek further than that. I will not go. Now, for the restless Indian.
I'm busy, and I'm not to be disturbed.
Will I disturb you for a moment or two, Mr. Rass? This is Mr. Watson, foreman to the college builders.
Evening, sir. Sorry for the upset.
I am the college surveyor. I need to make a quick inspection of your rooms.
Inspection? I am preparing for an important test. I cannot be interrupted in this manner. Mr. Soames...
Mr. Soames knows that we're here. I must seek your permission. Mr. Gilchrist below had the same reservations, but it only took a moment or two, and he was happy to oblige.
Oh, well, if Gilchrist... I suppose, in that case, you'd better come in.
Yes.
What is it you wish to see?
Yeah, it's a matter of the window, sir. The window. I need to make a quick sketch of it.
The window? The window is unsound?
Oh, no, sir. No. Nothing like that. Well, perhaps eventually that will be Mr. Watson's problem.
Mere structural.
For the moment, all I need to do is make a drawing. Dear. I seem to have broken the lead in my pencil. I wonder, could you oblige, sir?
I wish to borrow a pencil.
If you'd be so kind.
For a surveyor to be supplied with but one pencil seems not quite correct. Show me the broken pencil.
Here it is, sir. As you can see.
Indeed, I do see. What you need is a knife, not another pencil. You may borrow my knife.
Oh, thank you, sir. Yeah.
As a foreman builder, Mr. Watson, do you not carry a supply of pencils and measuring devices?
As a rule, yes, but this evening the surveyor is taking a quick journey, a visit.
Thank you so much, Mr. Ress. Here's your knife. I'm sorry we disturbed you.
I am not interested in your apologies. I am preparing for an important academic test tomorrow morning, and I will see to it that the college masters know of this disturbance that you have caused. I trust we will not meet again.
A very extreme reaction. Soames said he was the calmest of men.
Yes, but you saw him pacing about in his room when we looked in from the outside.
I did. We all did. Would you not say he had something to hide?
Well, you know me. For the moment, I say nothing. Now, we've arrived at the top nest, and Mr. McLaren.
Who are you? Why are you? Get back to from whence you came!
Mr. McLaren, I'm sorry to disturb you, but being as I am the college surveyor, I have to ask you if you'd mind...
Disturb me? You've already disturbed me! College surveyor? What is that? Who is that? I have an exam tomorrow. I am trying to work. And I won't be drawn by anyone.
No, it was Mr. Soames who suggested that...
Soames? That dithering old nannygoat. Now you listen to me, Mr. College Surveyor. You can go to blazes. If you persist to such an extent that you force me to open this door, it will only be to throw you down the stairs, where you will doubtless fetch up at the door of nannygoat Soames. I want no more of ye other than the sound of departure. Understood?
A rude fellow. I warn you, Holmes.
How tall is McLaren exactly?
I cannot undertake to say exactly. He is taller than the Indian, but not so tall as Gilchrist. I suppose 5'6" would be about it.
Thank you. And now I bid you good night.
But good heavens! You are surely not going to leave in this abrupt fashion. I must take some definite action tonight.
I'll drop around tomorrow morning and chat matters over. It's possible that I may be in a position then to indicate some course of action. Meanwhile, change nothing.
If you say so.
I do say so, and you can be perfectly easy in your mind. We shall find some way out of your difficulties. One thing. I shall take the pieces of black clay with me. Thank you. Good night. Well, Watson, what do you make of it? A sort of a three-card trick, is it not?
Yeah.
Sort of three students, and it must be one of them. Your tank's your choice. Which is yours?
That foul-mouthed fellow on the top landing. He's the one with the worst record, the most to lose.
Mr. Rouse?
The Indian? Well, I must say he did strike me as being a sly fellow.
Gilchrist, what did you make of him?
I liked his frank and easy manner, the readiness with which he admitted us to his rooms. But McLaren wouldn't let us in. He has something to hide. The pencil and the knife, perhaps. Yeah,
the pencil and the knife are no longer relevant.
But surely three students, three motives.
And the fourth man?
Fourth man?
Bannister. The servant. What's his game in the matter?
Bannister? But he strikes me as being a perfectly honest man.
Oh, so does he me. And that's the puzzling part. Why should a perfectly honest man... Oh, by Jove, my dear fellow, it's 8:30. Our landlady spoke of green peas at 7:30. Really, Watson, what with your pipe smoking and your unpunctuality at meals, I expect you'll be given your marching orders. And if you get your notice to quit, I dare say I'll have to share your downfall. Not, however, before we've solved the problem of the nervous tutor, the careless servant, and the three enterprising students. Let's hurry back to our supper. This puzzle has whetted my appetite. Good morning, Watson.
Good morning.
I have to say that in matters of routine, you're reliable almost to a fault. 8:00 and you're washed, shaved and more than half-dressed. Mm. Can you do without breakfast?
Forgo breakfast? Oh, I'm not sure.
A postponement only, I promise you.
Well, in that case...
Splendid. It's time we went down to St. Luke's. Soames will be in a dreadful fidget until we tell him something positive.
Have you anything positive to tell him?
I think so.
You form some conclusion.
Yes, my dear Watson, I have solved the mystery.
But what fresh evidence have you got?
Aha! It's not for nothing that I've turned myself out of bed at the untimely hour of 6. I've put in 2 hours' hard work and covered at least 5 miles, and I've something to show for it. Look at these.
Why, there are the two pieces of clay that we found in Soames' rooms yesterday.
And now look.
Another piece of clay. A third piece.
Yesterday we had two, today we have three, and it's a fair argument that where number three came from is also the source of numbers one and two. Eh, Watson?
Well, it's a fair argument, yes, but...
Now, Watson, put an end to your toilet, and let's hasten to St. Luke's, where, if I'm any judge of character, Mr. Soames will be in a fair state of fret.
Thank heavens that you have come. I feared that you'd given up in despair. What am I to do? The hour of decision is upon us.
You can let the examination proceed.
But one of the candidates...
He shall not compete.
You know him?
I think so. And I will demonstrate it to you. But first, please call your servant Bannister.
Bannister?
Do as I say.
Oh. Bannister, will you come here, please?
If this matter is not to become public, Soames, we must give ourselves certain powers and resolve ourselves into a... Yes, a small private court-martial. So, I shall occupy this armchair. Yes, let's position it so its back's against the light. Yes, good. Now, you, Soames, place a chair to my right, and you, Watson, to my left. Yes. So.
Yes, Mr. Soames? You called? What was it?
Come in, Bannister, and close the door behind you. Will you please tell us the truth about yesterday's incident?
I've told you everything, sir.
Nothing to add?
Nothing at all, sir.
Well, then, I must make some suggestions to you. When you felt faint and sat down in that chair, did you do so in order to conceal some object which would have shown who'd been in the room?
No, sir. Certainly not.
That's only a suggestion. I frankly admit I'm unable to prove it, but it seems to me probable enough that the moment Mr. Soames left you alone, you released the man who was hiding in the bedroom.
There was no man, sir.
Speak up, Bannister.
There was no man, sir.
I'm sorry to hear you saying that, Bannister. Up to now, you may have spoken the truth, but now I know that you've lied.
There was no man, sir.
Come, come, Bannister.
No, sir. There was no one.
Well, in that case, you can give us no further information, but I would like you to remain in the room. Now, Mr. Soames, I'm going to ask you to go up to young Gilchrist and ask him to step down here.
Oh, yes. No, I don't see. Yes, of course.
Yes, Watson, I think it might be best if you were to position yourself by the window. Yes, there you may the better observe what's to follow.
Holmes, I don't quite see.
No, but you will see. I assure you that revelation is at hand. Bannister, you're sure you have nothing to say to us?
No, sir. Nothing, sir.
Very well. From now on, you'll be silent. Stand over there to the bedroom door.
Yes, sir.
Gilchrist is on his way, but I don't...
Would you please resume your seat?
Oh, well... You want to see me, gentlemen?
Yes, Mr. Gilchrist, would you please close the door? We are all quite alone here, and no one need ever know one word of what passes between us. We can be perfectly frank with each other. We want to know, Mr. Gilchrist, why you, an honourable man, ever came to commit such an act as you did yesterday.
Bannister!
No, Mr. Gilchrist, sir. I never said a word. Never one word.
No, but you have now. You must see, sir, that your position is hopeless. That your only chance of escaping from public disgrace lies in a frank confession.
Why, you ask, why did I do it? Well, Mr. Holmes, for now I know who you are. I have asked myself that question every moment ever since. Why? Why? Why?
Come, come, sir. It is human to err. Sit down. Sit down and compose yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
Perhaps it would be easier for you if I were to describe what occurred. You must listen carefully and see that I do you no injustice. From the moment, Mr. Soames, that you told me that no one, not even Bannister, could have known that the examination papers were in your room, the case began to take a definite shape in my mind. It seemed an unthinkable coincidence that a man should dare to enter the room, and that, by chance, on the very day the paper should be on that table. I dismissed that. The man who entered knew that the papers were there.
But how could he have known?
Now, one moment, Watson. I am right, am I not, Mr. Gilchrist?
Yes.
Now, Watson, you ask how could he have known. When we came to St. Luke's yesterday, you remember that I first examined this window from the outside.
I do indeed.
You, Mr. Soames, amused me by supposing that I was contemplating the possibility of someone having, in broad daylight, forced himself through it.
Well, it seemed at the time, I thought...
Such an idea was absurd. I dismissed it as soon as I saw the outside of these rooms. Mm. What I was interested in was how tall a man would need to be in order to see, as he passed, what papers were on the central table. I am 6 feet high, and I could only do it with an effort. No one smaller than I would have had a chance.
That is why you were so interested in the height of the three students.
That is why. How tall are you, Mr. Gilchrist?
6'3½".
And am I right in my conjecture?
You are.
Now, Soames, the cut in the leather top of your table.
Ah, yes, it is a new table. Fine leather.
I could make nothing of that cut until, in your description of Gilchrist, you mentioned that he was a long-distance jumper. Then the whole thing came to me in an instant, and I only required certain corroborative evidence, which I speedily obtained. What happened was this. Listen carefully, Mr. Gilchrist. You employed yesterday afternoon at the athletic grounds practicing the jump. You returned through the college quad carrying your jumping shoes, which are provided with several sharp spikes. Do you see my drift, Mr. Soames?
Not really, no.
By means of your great height, Gilchrist, you saw the proofs laid out upon the table and guessed what they were, correct?
Correct.
Well, no harm would have been done had it not been that as he passed your door, Soames, he saw the key which had been left there due to Bannister's carelessness. A sudden impulse came over him to enter and see if they were indeed the proofs.
That is true. It was the damnedest thing.
But when you saw that they were the proofs of the exam papers, you yielded to temptation. You put your shoes, your spiked shoes, on the table. And what was it that you put on that chair near the window?
My gloves.
Ah, your gloves.
I took the proofs, one at a time, to the window to copy them. I thought that Mr. Soames would return by the main gate and I would be able to see him.
I came in by the side gate.
I was not to know that, sir.
No. No, of course not.
The first I knew of your return was when I heard you outside the door of this room.
There was no possible escape. You caught up your shoes and darted into the bedroom. You can see that the cut on the tabletop is slight on the one side, but deepens in the direction of the bedroom door. That in itself is enough to show us the direction in which the shoes were drawn, and that is where the intruder took refuge as companion to Mr. Soames' hanging clothes. Do you dispute this, Mr. Gilchrist?
In essence, all you say is true.
But good heavens, man! You confess to your misdeed, and you have nothing to add?
Yes, sir. I have. But the shock of this disgraceful exposure has bewildered me. I have a letter here which I wrote to you early this morning, in the middle of a restless night. It was before I knew that my sin had found me out. Please read it aloud, sir.
Dear Mr. Soames, etc. I have determined not to go in for the Fortescue Prize. I have been offered a commission in the Rhodesian police, and I am going out to South Africa at once. Well, I'm glad to know that you did not intend to profit by your unfair advantage.
May one ask, why did you change your purpose?
Bannister can tell you.
Yes, Bannister, you must speak frankly now. It is clear that only you could have let this young man out and, having done so, locked the door behind you and gone to your own quarters. There is no question now as to what happened. But I ask you to clear up the last point in this puzzle and tell us the reason for your action.
Oh, simple enough, sir. If only you'd known. But with all your cleverness, Mr. Holmes, it was impossible that you should know. Time was, gentlemen, when I was butler to old Sir Jabez Gilchrist, this young gentleman's father. Now, when Sir Jabez was ruined, I came to college as servant. When his son came here as a student, I watched him for all I could. For all I could. For the sake of the old days...
Yesterday afternoon, Bannister.
Well, when I came into this room after the alarm was given, the first thing that I saw was Mr. Gilchrist's gloves a-lying on that chair. I knew those gloves well, and I understood their message. If Mr. Soames saw them, the game was up. So I flopped down on that chair, and nothing would have shifted me until Mr. Soames had gone, and I could release my young master. Or dandle him on my knee, sir.
You gave him his gloves and hurried him hence. You knew that he'd done wrong.
Well, he confessed it all to me. Now, wasn't it natural, sir, that I should save him? Wasn't it natural, also, that I should speak to him as his dead father would have done? And make him understand that he couldn't profit by such a deed? Do you blame me, sir?
No, Mr. Bannister. I do not. I salute you for your loyalty. Well, Mr. Soames, I think we've cleared your little problem up, and breakfast awaits us. I'm grateful to you for having drawn my attention to the puzzle that I've just solved. It's an engrossing one. How long, Watson? To be late for supper is forgivable. To be late for breakfast will put us beyond the pale. Mr. Gilchrist, I trust that a bright future awaits you in Rhodesia. For once you have fallen low, let us see in the future how high you can rise. A pyramidal mixture of clay and sawdust. And that's what adheres to the spikes of an athlete's shoes.
And the spikes made the mark on the tabletop. A sad end to young Gilchrist's university career.
Sad, yes. But he's young, basically a good fellow. He's made a mistake once. He will not do so again. That will be an ample time for breakfast.
Yes, and I'm ready for it. Mrs. Burdick's breakfasts are quite splendid.
I fear that I've been a surly companion over the past few days. Yes, but the solving of this problem of the three students has quite stimulated me. We'll have breakfast, smoke a pipe, I shall go to the library and apply myself. And I fully intend to be back in Baker Street in time for tea.
I'll settle up with Mrs. Burdick, see to the packing and have a last stroll around the colleges. I think that when I come to write up this case, it will be best for me not to be specific as to the actual university or the true names of the protagonists. The facts, of course, I shall report accurately.
As ever, Watson. You'll be the guardian of fact and the soul of discretion.
In The Three Students, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams, with Dennis Hawthorne as Hilton Soames and Desmond Llewellyn as Bannister. Gilchrist was played by Michael Onslow, Dowlat Rass by David Thorpe, and Miles McLaren by Matthew Morgan. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Three Students was dramatized for radio by Dennis Hawthorne and directed by Enid Williams.